What is good, guys and gals, and welcome to the Films and Pixels Podcast, episode 43. Once again, I'm your host, Afif. Thank you so much for tuning in. It still means a lot. And again, I just want to encourage you all to just, you know, like, comment, subscribe. You get the whole deal. But I mean, I know it's been some time. I'm really sorry. Just recently, it took some time, but I finally got episode 42 up. So if you haven't seen episode 42 yet, please do so. A lot of exciting topics I talked about here. And, you know, I realized the timing of this recording. It's a difficult time, you know, with the whole Palestinian conflict and so forth. And, you know, the world is just really hurt, angry, and even more so divided, because there is a lot of divided opinions, unfortunately, on the situation. But I don't want to go dive in further on politics or anything like that, or any sort of history. I don't want to do that. But, you know, I just want to, you know, keep it lighthearted, cheer everyone up, catch up on topics that have been going on over the last 2 weeks or so. So it should be fun, you know. So it's something that I'm kind of looking forward to do, you know what I mean? So I guess it'd be really good just to, you know, de-stress and keep everything off my mind and hopefully off of your minds as well. So what I want to talk about for episode 43, definitely my review reaction on Barbie. Yes, I finally got to see the movie. Yes, I know what I said before. I didn't love it and wanted to watch it, or I should say I didn't want to watch it, but I did. And it's a big thumbs up in many ways. So yeah, also the hype and all the buzz around iPhone 15. Jim Ryan stepping down from Sony. And more news from their rival Microsoft. Major leak. Xbox leak. Could the FTC be responsible through the whole Activision procedure? And how did Phil Spencer respond? Plus, the writer strike is finally over. I mean, when I uploaded the episode for 42, I was talking about the whole writer strike thing, and then sometime just before uploading, it was finally over, but the actor strike is still ongoing. Plus, some of my thoughts and reactions on the Dame Dala trade, Damian Lillard going from Trailblazers to the Milwaukee Bucks. So that should be really good. But yeah, again, like, if you haven't caught up to everything before, episode 42 is up. The same for 40 and 41 and 39. But yeah, I'm looking forward to episode 43. So please stay tuned with me. And yeah, let's get this thing going. Okay, first topic. I'm actually going to review the Barbie movie. Yes, the new Barbie movie that's taken the world, brought a lot of excitement. Many people wearing pink, dressing pink, taking photos in pink and so forth. New Barbie soundtracks and so forth. And you know, there's a good reason why it's now Warner Brothers' highest grossing movie, even surpassing The Dark Knight from 2008. Now, remember when I said that there was no way I was going to watch this movie? I didn't want to. I don't think it was a bad idea. And all that stuff, like, I thought too girly. My perception of this movie could not have been more wrong. I went in there just tepid expectations, and they were more than surpassed. This movie wasn't just a lot of fun. It was delightful, surprising, funny in a lot of ways, and more so thought-provoking for a movie based on on children's doll, specifically for girls. There was really a lot of social commentary of how men and women can succeed and operate in society. And that was really surprising how it all was. So it was just really great. I mean, I just love how, like, from the opening scene, there was a lot of this vibrant energy. Everyone seemed to be having fun and so forth. And we can see how the Barbies, all the women, of course, they're all named Barbies, having not just fun, but, you know, like, having big jobs and, you know, big titles and so forth, or even like a woman president. And I really love how it was like a African American female president played by Issa Rae, as well in this role. That was just really significant. So I thought that was just really cool and so forth. And of course, all the males that are Ken dolls, you know, just having fun, you know, in the beach, not really, they're not pushed to the side, but, you know, they're just there, you know, like lifeguards or so forth. So that's just something that was fun, you know, and I really liked even that one big dance party scene that was like in Barbie's house. Everyone's dancing. And I like how the two Kens, Ryan Gosling, the main Ken, who I will comment further, his role was excellent, excellent performance. And Simu Liu, I love how there's like this budding rivalry between the two Kens, you know. And then when the stereotypical Barbie, of course, played by the main Barbie, Margot Robbie, who was absolutely phenomenal in this movie, had thoughts of dying, then like you could see the trickle effect, her feet becoming flat, bad breakfast, barely cold or no shower, or just cold to no shower at all. And so she has to find out what is going on. She first sees the weird Barbie played by Kate McKinnon, and then an easy path to the real world. There was no need for a bunch of extra space for like a rocket from Elon Musk or whatever, like a huge scene, or you know what I mean, just one of those scenes where like, okay, they're gonna take off now, just go through the boat to rollerblade. It was like, I love how that whole part is just really fun, just engaging, you know what I mean. But even so, like part of those scenes and when they were both in the real world, I thought they were really engaging. From like even Barbie, you know, meeting an old woman, just commenting how she's beautiful, to then finding a group of schoolgirls, they were accusing her of, you know, enforcing huge beauty standards that are hard to follow. I just love how like even Barbie was called out for beauty standards that are impossible to follow through and just hard to live up to, and like really made her cry. I just love how the whole scene played out. And even like Ryan Gosling's Ken, again, amazing, asking a bunch of men like, how do you get these jobs, the education, and then goes to library and, you know, finds books about patriarchy. It was just really cool. And even the Mattel bosses, you know, especially the main one of Will Ferrell, just, of course, Will Ferrell being comedic as always, and just finding this Barbie and try to put her in a box and so forth. But nothing evil about him. He may be a quote-unquote antagonist, but there's no antagonism from him. Just being fun and silly. And I just love how that whole chase sequence, and even Barbie finding the Ruth, or Ruthie, I think her name is, Barbie doll creator, I think. And even like one of the more important characters, I forgot her name, but I know that played by America Ferrera, and the character's daughter played by Ariana Greenblatt. I just thought like watching their relationship being repaired and improved through Barbie's journey, being part of Barbie's journey, and just seeing the society, and just getting it, just realizing how Barbie dolls used to sort of connect them and how they grew apart. And just, it was really rewarding just to see both women just having their relationships repaired. And I just thought it was really lighthearted. Really nice. In fact, I liked how, you know, like I was saying before, Will Ferrell, like he brought comedic value. And I love how America Ferrera's character just, you know, challenging women's place in society, and like as well when trying to, you know, dehypnotize them, and being part of the plot of like trying to have the Kens go against each other, and even like the main Ken just seeing, coming back, just realizing, okay, this is how Barbie Land should be, this is how it should run, the houses, this is how the female Barbie should be treated. I just thought it was a lot more thought-provoking. And, you know, like I was saying, just questions about the jobs that they should have and they should be in charge and so forth. And of course, there was a narrator, great narration by Helen Mirren. I really loved how Helen Mirren was part of the movie as well. You know, and I thought it was like really fun and cool, like no action, but just seeing the Kens fighting each other because the Barbies tricked them, that was like really funny, you know, because with all the Barbies trying to get the Kens jealous of each other, and then they go fight, and then the Barbies fix the constitution while stereotypical Ken in the end has a hard time figuring out his place. And I know I sound like I summarized the whole thing, but I gotta say the performances, Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling, excellent as always. The rest of the cast, just fun to watch as well. Praise to America Ferrera, just for even more commentary about women in the working world and how they should have more position in the corporate world, higher positions. If the Barbies can, why can't women in the real world? I thought that was really important to highlight as well. And again, like I was just saying, like the film set, just excellent, like really colorful as well, but a lot of pink. There was so much pink in this movie that there was actually a story I found about how there was so much pink that they were drying up in the world, or at least in film sets around the world. But it was kind of hilarious how there was a shortage of the pink color. So that was kind of hilarious. But it was nice to see like these bright, beautiful colors. Oh man, it was just great to see all. I was just delighted, you know. I'm just trying to put, you know, make sentences go work together. But again, really colorful, really delightful. I was surprised by how much I liked it. I had a smile on my face. It wasn't girly. It wasn't childish. It wasn't dumb at all. It was just thought-provoking, in a way, socially conscious, just challenges, just by challenging men in the world and really challenging like how women can and should be not just more respected, but you know, have higher positions, whether especially like a woman president, as we saw a woman president and being in charge of changing the constitution. So I thought that was just really interesting. But again, one spectacular work by Greta Gerwig, you know, the same director from Lady Bird, all the success, well deserved, you know, made good use of the budget. Like I was saying, it's actually, the success is earned. And what I am surprised about is how it surpassed even The Dark Knight and other DC movies as the highest grossing Warner Brothers film of all time right now. But then again, based on the performance of recent DC films, they're not exactly surprising. But even surpassing Christopher Nolan films, that's amazing. But I mean, if you can still find it in theaters, I know it's now October and it probably ended near the end of the summer, but if you can still watch it, please go ahead. It's just delightful. It's fun. You know, even for men, there's nothing wrong for men to watch it. Just go have a good time. Whether you bring your wife, your girlfriend, or if you don't bring any of them, just go have fun. Just enjoy it. And just, you know, be delighted because it is a delightful movie. Okay, so another year, another major iPhone release. This time is the iPhone 15, but of course, there are like four iPhone models. I know there's the iPhone 15, iPhone 15 Plus, and then there's the iPhone 50 Pro, and then iPhone 15 Pro Max included. And, you know, the 15 Pro Max is actually getting a lot of praise right now just because of how, I think, remotely or some sort of connectivity, it can actually play console quality video games right now that are up to the modern standards somehow on a phone. They're able to make it work or through some sort of projector. I don't know. I'm just finding out about how the 15 Pro Max is powerful enough for like console quality games. So that's kind of crazy and interesting. But yeah, like just basically with the specs, there's like the GPU does have 5-core. Of course, cinematic mode has HDR. And of course, the video resolution can go up to 4K, and pixels are measured by 1179 by 2556 with a ratio of 19 by 5 by 9 ratio and at least a 461 pixel density. And yes, as you're probably aware with all the jokes and reactions, this time there is a USB Type-C. now can now just you know, just realizing that maybe the Thunderbolt is no longer relevant or so forth, you know, just condensing to the fact, just, you know, now they're just convinced by the fact that, you know, it's time for them to go with Type C. If like all the phones on Android Type C, might as well iPhone the Apple do it. So yeah, and of course, like the new iOS 17, I think, but newest iPhone iOS software included as well. Malls all over the world, you know, crowds get, you know, gathering to buy the new iPhones. Always presentations from Tim Cook. So yeah, as you can guess, iPhone 15 is really popular. I don't know, like, despite like all the advancements in technology from all the other competitors, whether it's Samsung or Sony or Huawei, even the Google Pixel phones, I mean, still everyone just gathers to the iPhones, maybe because of simplicity. No, it's not, I don't have anything against iPhones. It's just surprising to notice all this sort of hype and excitement. But again, there's likely a good reason for it. But I mean, like, I just feel bad for anyone, like, every 4 or 5 years, they have to buy a new iPhone because, of course, operating systems no longer being supported. Maybe some apps are slowly not being supported anymore, and newer iPhones likely costing a lot of money. But then keep in mind, maybe some people are not ready to go with the iPhone 15 now, unless it's for business reasons or work reasons, for mobile photography, mobile videography, which has become more and more important for a lot of professionals. So that part is understandable. But I mean, like, if you're someone with like the iPhone 13s and the iPhone 14s, I'm sure the new iOS is likely applicable, but also still very relevant. So no need to spend, again, like, I'm just assuming they're like, what, $800, $900 by now, the iPhone 15s. I'm just assuming, I could be wrong. But it's likely going to be a success for many months to come, until obviously the iPhone 16 is released in September. So, I mean, we don't know what it's going to be like, but we already know it's going to happen. Let's just admit it. Like, there's going to be an iPhone 16, whether we like it or not. And I still have the same Galaxy A71. I admit, I do like the A73, but I'm in no rush to buy it. I know the price is good, but you see what I mean? Like, my phone is still very relevant, like, updated to Android 13, and I have no rush to get it. So, unless you're some sort of crazy iPhone collector, then okay, good for you. But if you're not seriously going to use it, just wait maybe a couple of more years until there's a viable reason to get a new iPhone 15. But still, best of luck to anyone who can buy iPhone 15s. If they're not out of stock in retail stores or online, like Amazon or anywhere else, for example, eBay as well. Good luck to anyone who can buy iPhone 15s and who can afford them. Kudos to you, really. All right, so Jim Ryan in the news again. After more than 30 years as part of Sony, in different roles, especially in recent years as president of Sony Interactive Entertainment, Jim Ryan has announced that starting next year, he will officially step down. Yeah, so that's right. Jim Ryan will retire from his position as president of PlayStation, Sony Interactive Entertainment. Now, he did cite the need to spend more time with his family while having trouble balancing between working in the US and, you know, having trouble balancing between working in the US and finding the schedule to travel back to the UK and, you know, to see his family there. So that's another important factor. And, you know, what I've noticed, it seems to be music to the ears of many hardcore PlayStation fans. I mean, a lot of his actions and quotes in recent years, especially calling PS1 and PS2 ancient history and saying, why would anyone play them? And plus, he did like spearhead the launch of the PS5 and also some of the other exclusives, whether it's Horizon Forbidden West, God of War Ragnarok, even like The Last of Us Part 2. I know he was part of that as well. Soon it's going to be Marvel's Spider-Man 2. But so yeah, like definitely a big part of like some of their exclusives launch, helping them launch, and you know, a big reason he was really the one with you know, some of their exclusives being ported to PC. Now, obviously, he was not with the idea, but many developers for many, many years pushed him, and he got convinced. So games like Returnal and Ratchet & Clank, A Rift Apart, and Spider-Man Miles Morales, and Sackboy, Big Adventure, even Days Gone, Horizon Zero Dawn, they all went to Windows, especially Uncharted and God of War. Like, they're on Windows, available on Steam, but not like they don't go to Windows at launch, not like Xbox, like months later, something that they do. So that's just kind of interesting there. Well, yeah, like some head scratching decisions that seemed like anti-consumer decisions, including like high price tags or like increases pricing later on, and stance on, like I said, backwards compatibility and cloud gaming service, and you know, just part of the investment on like some live games as a live service thing that doesn't always work out, and investing in studios, but yeah, hasn't made the best out of it, especially since buying Bungie as well. But I mean, like for the time being, at least Sony's chief operating officer, Hiroki Totoki, will take over as interim CEO following his departure. Jim Ryan did have this quote to say, "I've relished the opportunity to have a job I love in a very special company, working with great people and incredible partners," he said in a statement. "I will leave having been privileged to work on the products that have touched millions of lives across the world. PlayStation will always be part of my life, and I feel more optimistic than ever about the future of SIE. Thus far, 40 million consoles have..." Oh yeah, wait. Sorry, that's totally different. So it's good that with Jim Ryan, like 40 million PS5s have been able to be sold, especially with all the scalpers and during the whole COVID-19 pandemic. Still not at this pace of PS4, but it'll get there. And yeah, another quote from Kenichiro Yoshida. "Jim Ryan has been an inspirational leader throughout his entire period with us, but never more so than in overseeing the launch of PlayStation 5 in the midst of the global pandemic. That extraordinary achievement made by the entire SIE team has been steadily built on, and PlayStation is on track to become SIE's most successful console yet." Well, the data shows that it will be, but let's just see if it can surpass even PS2. That's going to be hard because, you know, PS2 is king, let's be honest. So yeah, he's been part of like recent acquisitions, of course, like with Nixxis Software for the PC ports and Blue Point Games for some of the remakes, like Shadow of Colossus and Demon's Souls, so forth. Even a studio owned by Jade Raymond as well. But yeah, he's also been very vocal about, you know, with Microsoft getting Activision because of how it would affect gamers buying PS5 with, you know, Call of Duty. That's, and you know what I mean? So, but it also didn't help that, also, yes, there's still some single player blockbusters, but there's been more of a focus as well on the whole multiplayer MMO games as a live service sort of thing. But I mean, like his stance on abortion regarding the Roe versus Wade did not sit well. His stance on it was left a sour taste in the employee's mouth, and that's why one of their biggest studios, Insomniac Games, did donate $50,000 to women's rights organization, but really could not say anything about it publicly. So I mean, like, unlike Sean Layden, Jim Ryan has been somewhat of a polarizing figure as part of SIE. Yes, there were some good moments. He did accomplish plenty, but a lot of his quotes, some of the anti-consumer actions, and sort of his stance on social issues have not sit well, whether it's with the employees or with consumers or with anyone. And you know, I think he's making the right move as someone who's been part of the company for 30 years, it's time to move on. It's understandable between not really being able to balance his job in the US and family time in the UK. It's understandable by now, already spearheaded the launch of the new console, time to move on, retire, maybe do something else. It'll be good for him as well. And hopefully someone that can take the company in a good direction and hopefully build some goodwill, just like Sean Layden did in the PS4 era. So it's been a concern that Jim Ryan, mixed results still, again, some good moments, but mixed results. Even then, like, there is a trailer and a blog on a slimmer, sleeker PS5 consoles that to me look actually pretty good, but that's a different story. But all in all, a new sleeker PS5 is coming this holiday season, but again, still maybe with someone else in charge, the company will be in better direction. I would hope that maybe revive some old IPs, or instead of the whole online live service MMO multiplayer, I know that they invested a lot of money in Bungie acquiring them, like for $3 billion or something, but it's good to like stay consistent on the whole single player blockbuster. After all, it was exactly what made PS4 popular among many reasons. So changing the course, I don't think it's wise to be similar to Xbox, but I think with a new leadership and better message, I think they'll be fine going forward. Speaking of competitor rivals, Microsoft, as I was saying before, a situation of their own with the whole leaked documents. Yeah, because Microsoft right now are suffering through an embarrassing episode. Someone accidentally leaked a bunch of documents exposing major, major details about how, you know, their series console is going to be redesigned, announcements of upcoming games, specs details. It's just really bad. So I'll start with what happened here. So part of the documents did include a slate of games that will likely get remastered. There's probably sequel and prequels as well. Among them, there could be announcements of a Fallout 3 remastered, Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion remastered, possibly a Dishonored 3, a prequel of Doom, like a Doom Year Zero, a Ghostwire Tokyo sequel, and some sort of Indiana Jones games, just to name a few that could happen. And even discussions about, dare I say, actually thinking about acquiring both Nintendo and Valve. Yeah, can you imagine Xbox trying to acquire Nintendo and Valve? Mario, Zelda, Donkey Kong, Pokemon, Metroid, Star Fox, all on Xbox? No, that's just really awkward. No, I don't think that will sit well with anyone. And that's not going to happen. Even Capcom said no to any sort of possible acquisitions. That's not going to happen. And even like Elder Scrolls 6 not coming out anytime soon. No surprise there, but maybe 2026 or after, let's find out. But even like a couple of consoles, like the big one, Series S looking model, codenamed Brooklyn, it's gonna have 2 terabyte storage, USB in the front, has a cylinder design, faster Wi-Fi technology, another controller model that I will talk about, still in the same price of $500. And then a Series S model, just codenamed Elwood. Just more storage and better Wi-Fi, probably at $300. Likely what these consoles will do will just be even more power efficient as well. And probably improve on noise, although I doubt that noise is a problem. And even a new controller, just codenamed Sibel, like direct to cloud connection, rechargeable, swappable batteries, and even something similar to the DualSense, like precision haptic feedback. So that's going to be really cool, just to be in the same capabilities of the DualSense, and lift to wake controller, quiet buttons, and so forth. Even possibly like even the 10th generation could be like in 2028 or 2029. For when they're going to start releasing a new console that already in discussion. And possibly some sort of mobile controller plus a premium and elite gamepad as well. So that's understandable there. Sorry about that. There were even plans initially to acquire like Warner Brothers gaming division, but to be honest, that's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. So let's just calm down there. You know, so it's just an embarrassing episode. Whoever leaked it, easily by accident, the leaked documents, you could easily find them on many news sources, whether it's Engadget or The Verge or IGN or Game Rant, Screen Rant, whomever. You could even easily find this story. You can even find a statement from Phil Spencer. He had to respond to this whole episode. Basically, he said that, saying that future plans will eventually be revealed over time about what will come next. He's still excited. They've always been hard at work, bringing the best product forward. But yeah, based on what happened, this is not a good look on them. It's actually embarrassing, like I was just saying. And you know what? It's just, yeah. I somehow feel sorry for, I don't want to say I feel sorry for them, but I mean, for Xbox, it's the biggest leak that's ever happened, because it's now all sort of future surprises completely spoiled. If what's being said about possible announcements of upcoming games are true, I mean, now it's just, you know, now the buzz has been lowered. You know what I mean? That's the worst part of these leaks, that now the anticipation, excitement, there's no longer going to be buzz up for them if they're accurate. And based on what has happened, they seem completely accurate. So, you know, when the right moment comes, we will know, but it's just not a good look for anyone at Microsoft or at Xbox as well. Finally, after 148 days, the writer's strike is over. Everyone has now come into an agreement. Writers will be back on TV shows and movies and late night shows and so forth. Now, there is an actual website that details all the agreements, so I can't really say. But the Writers Guild of America represents nearly 12,000 writers that worked in show business across the U.S., how they will be better compensated. But even more so about like how they can generate profits from AI and how they can still be employed even with the rise of AI and so forth. Because it is important, like even with AI, they just want to make sure they receive credit and not like have AI do all the writing work for them on anything. So it's more than just about AI. It's about like, you know, being fairly treated, better work culture, better compensation, better salaries, improved salaries, getting credit, just everything involved. There's a website. I don't have all the details, but you know, generating profits from AI, a big part of it. But like I said, there's a huge website about it. Yeah, in fact, I kept it with me on my document I have. So I'll try not to forget and like leave a link if anyone is interested about these details. There's a lot, so maybe just, if you're not interested to read it, just skim through, but a lot of important stuff happening. And, you know, of course, with movies and late night shows, sort of an awkward situation, by the way, happened. Before it was officially over, Drew Barrymore made an attempt to go back on air. I don't think any of her writers were involved, and that did not make her look good and made a lot of people upset. But even like, since it was over, of course, the Jimmy Kimmel, the Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, I think Seth Meyers, among them, like many late night show hosts, have come back on air. Of course, they're all happy. I think Kelly Clarkson does something similar. But when it was time for Drew Barrymore to come back, what happened? Her writers did not come back because of how she violated their rights, or supposedly violated some sort of code among writers or something. Just she upset her writers, she upset the writing team for her Drew Barrymore show. So since then, they have not been back, like making this whole thing and situation embarrassing from her end. So, you know, Drew Barrymore or any other TV show host. Wait for your writers, respect them. She did this in solidarity of the writers, and then when it was officially over, they didn't come back initially. I don't know if they still will, but they did not come back because, you know, she went on air without them, and then, you know what I mean? It just, she made herself look worse. So it was a strange situation, but now it's a important lesson. Don't do anything without your writers, because you can't land the joke. You have no jokes, and you can't land any punchlines without your writing team. So that's an important lesson there. And more importantly, their rights should be respected from now on. All right. So again, as a basketball fan, while I'm still trying to keep up with football, with Premier League and La Liga, especially watching Arsenal beat Manchester City, that I should say. And I know that there were a few La Liga games that were on BN Sports 1. Try to catch them the best I can. But the main topic here that I do want to talk about, Damian Lillard, finally the whole trade saga over, like late September, just before the NBA had their media day. After 11 seasons, Lillard moves on from Portland Trailblazers to Milwaukee Bucks. Even though he didn't go to the Miami Heat like he wanted, he still is now part of a much better team, closer to winning another championship like the Milwaukee Bucks, with Giannis Antetokounmpo and a core that still includes Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Pat Connaughton, Bobby Portis with new coach Adrian Griffin. But yeah, I do have the details of the trade. Of course, the Bucks, they got Lillard. The Blazers got Jrue Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, draft pick Tomani Kamara, a 2028 first-round pick swap from Milwaukee, a 2029 first-round pick from Milwaukee, and a 2030 first-round pick swap from Milwaukee. So the Bucks gave up a bunch of draft picks, but for a trade like this that includes a high-caliber all-star, one of the best players in the game, highly valued asset, of course you're going to have to give up draft picks as well. But there's a third team involved in this trade, and I think the Phoenix Suns did well. They got Yusuf Nurkic, Nasir Little, Keon Johnson, and Grayson Allen. Although the interesting part is regarding Jrue Holiday, the Blazers did him a favor and shipped him immediately, at least a week later, to the Boston Celtics. Of course, it did include players and draft picks. Celtics, in return for Holiday, got Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams III, a 2024 first-round pick from Golden State Warriors, an unprotected 2029 first-round pick. Now, of course, a trade like this will help the Celtics deepen their roster, another move that will strengthen their chances for another championship. Already got Kristaps Porzingis and now Holiday as well. I mean, too bad Robert Williams III, he had to go, but as good as he is defensively, he always gets injured, especially in the playoffs, and that hasn't always helped Boston. Malcolm Brogdon, I mean, Celtics tried to trade him to the Clippers earlier in the summer, but even their relationship wasn't very good later in the summer, not just because of that failed trade attempt, but because of how they handled his elbow injury and whether he needed surgery or not. So it seems like he will stay with the Blazers. Bucks and Celtics did really well on this whole thing. I like where the Suns are now, improving their depth. The Blazers will be an intriguing team, but they're not going to be competing for a championship anytime soon. With the moves made, you know, already like almost a couple of years ago, CJ McCollum traded to Pelicans. And now with Lillard and Nurkic gone, I mean, those are like their core pieces that help the Trailblazers stay competitive. But I mean, like, there was an interesting story on BleacherReport.com written by Chris Haynes detailing the saga between Lillard and the Blazers of how that relationship deteriorated over the summer, especially with Lillard was hoping to be in Miami by now. And even though he's disappointed, he is excited about being part of a better situation. So, I'd like what the Blazers now have. They're not going to be competitive, but at least they did well. Celtics got better. I like how the Suns improved their depth. Of course, we all know DeAndre Ayton not really happy being with the Suns contract situation and unhappy with his role being like third or fourth best player on the team. So I think being like the main big man in Portland, I think he'll be happy. He is happy, actually. He's definitely very happy about being traded for sure. But yeah, I mean, now it all hinges on hopefully Damian Lillard being a better defender. Of course, making shots, creating shots, and trying to fit in with the Bucks team that still has championship aspirations and hoping to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo happy, who has been vocal about saying if the Bucks are not going to be serious about winning championships, then it's perhaps he should think about moving on, like 2025 when he can be a unrestricted free agent. So a little bit of pressure there from Giannis, but also the way the Bucks finished the postseason. Of course, Mike Budenholzer getting fired. His brother, just before game four, died from a car crash. So I think that severely affected his focus. And meanwhile, Jrue Holiday, you know, getting his ass kicked by Jimmy Butler. Let's just admit it. Butler tried to defend Jimmy Butler against Miami. Butler embarrassed Holiday and a bunch of players. So I think like a major roster change and a major coaching change was much needed for a Bucks team that is still serious about competing for a championship. So we'll see when the regular season starts later in October. All right, guys and gals, that pretty much wraps it up for the Films and Pixels podcast episode 43. Yay. Thank you so much for watching and listening to this episode from beginning to end. Thank you for tuning in. It means a lot to me. It would help me if you like and subscribe and share. Even a comment is always appreciated. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I really hope you like the topics I spoke about. Sorry, my voice. Like, I know I have a monotonous voice. Sorry about it. I noticed it. But, you know, just gotta keep it well hydrated, you know, as well. But, good practice. But anyway, like, again, thank you so much for tuning in from beginning to end. This is the Films and Pixels podcast, episode 43. I am your host, Afif. Again, thank you so much for watching, listening. And, you know, this podcast is available wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's on Google Podcast, Anghami, Spotify, amongst them. So they're available on those platforms, as well as this video is going to be uploaded, of course, on YouTube. So again, thank you so much. And that pretty much wraps it up. Good day and good night.